Good morning. Good morning. It is 9 o'clock a.m. We are here today, Tuesday, August 18, 2015, in the OPA Hearing Room, Suite 907 of the DNA Building in Hagatnya, Guam. For the formal hearing of OPA PA 15006, IP&E Holdings, LLC versus Guam Power Authority. Presiding over the hearing today is Hearing Officer Anthony Camacho and Public Auditor Doris Flores Brooks. For the record, also present for the Office of Public Accountability are Yuka Hechinova, Clarisa Roki, and Christian Rivera. Will appellant IP&E Holdings please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Yes, good morning, everyone. Stephen Carrara, General Counsel, IP&E Holdings. And with me is Ms. Tassie Petticord, and she's Commercial Fleet Sales.
Thank you. Will Purchasing Agency Guam Power Authority please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Your Honor, Ms. Brooks. Graham Botha, Legal Counsel for GPA, and I apologize, but Jesse Regis should be here very shortly. But he will be the party representative for GPA.
Thank you. Will Interested Party Mobil Oil Guam Incorporated please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, R. Marcel Johnson, attorney representing Mobil Oil Guam Inc. And with me is Tom Anatok. He is currently the CMI Wholesale Fuel Territory Manager. At the time of the bid, he was the Guam Commercial Sales Territory Manager.
Thank you.
Could you spell Mr. Anatok's last name, please?
A-N-I-T-O-K.
A-N-I-T-O-K. And his present position is now?
It's the CMI Wholesale Fuel Territory Manager.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Anatok. All right. Are there any preliminary issues that we need to address before we begin?
None from us.
None from agency.
Okay. Now, as stated in the scheduling order in this matter, we're going to begin with the opening statements of the parties. Of course, the opening statements are just merely what you believe the evidence in this case illustrates. And guys, this is your appeal, Mr. Crow, your client's appeal. You're going to start. You'll be followed by Mr. Botha, and of course, Mr. Johnson. You'll have the opportunity to have your opening statement at the very end. Of course, these are not closing statements. You're going to have the opportunity to at the end of the evidence. Any questions? All right. So, Mr. Crow, you have the floor for your opening.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer. Good morning again. We're here on a protest matter involving the GPA's procurement of
diesel. You don't need to.
I can't help but stand.
Okay. I'm sorry. Your choice. It's your choice.
It's your choice if it makes you feel more comfortable.
Thank you. I do feel more comfortable standing.
My question is, are we still picking up Mr. Carrera?
Yes.
Okay, good. So long as we can still pick you up, you're okay.
This is for the GPA commercial fleet fuel card purchases, procurement matter 005-15. It was a sealed bid requirement. There were three offers, Mobil, South Pacific, and IP&E. As part of the requirements, it's IP&E's position that bidders were required to submit copies of the insurance policies that were required. And in this regard, we view the insurance policies as a responsiveness criteria as opposed to responsibility, because it was specifically set forth in the IFP. There were questions. You'll hear Ms. Petticord testify to the fact that this was a question that was raised to the Power Authority. And they were asked, will you accept a certificate of insurance? And they said no. They would like the copies of the policy, which we complied, and notably 76 complied as well. There was only one bidder that did not submit the insurance policy, and that was Mobil. This was raised to the agencies.
Sorry, Mr. Barrett, just for the record, Mr. Jesse Regis is now present as the party rep for the purchasing agency. Please proceed.
And this was raised to the agency's attention, and it was noted in the bid abstract documents. For this reason, we think that Mobil Oil was non-responsive and its bid should have been rejected. in response to that protest that we did file at the agency level was denied, and we note that during the procurement, this was raised by the evaluation committee, and the evaluation committee noted they asked the offers or the bidders, and that's a big distinction because people use the term offers and bidders. An offer is somebody who is involved in an RFP, and in that process, there's a give and take. You could ask questions to the prospective contractors. In a bid situation, the bid documents speak for themselves, and it's a response. Once you determine responsiveness to the bid, whether it complies, then award is made on the lowest price. And that's been a trying time and true process involved federal government, local governments. But unless the bid is responsive, it cannot be considered. And there are procedures of dealing with late bids or modifications to bids. And modifications to bids are not allowed unless it's like a trivial fact, replacing a number that could be ascertained on the face of the document. You're not allowed to go in a modification and change your bid. And you're not allowed to come back and submit documents that you failed to submit. Now, having made this insurance requirement a responsiveness factor, a GPA should live with the consequences of it. And if, regardless whether or not Mobil was the lowest bidder, the integrity of the process demands that you should award to the lowest responsive bidder. Now, I know Mobil argues that IP&E is not responsive because it didn't have the insurance number. And if that's the case, then they should go to the next low bidder if, in fact, their bid was responsive and they are determined to be a responsible contractor. I think, you know, it's kind of analogous to, you know, a late bid situation. If a bid is late, it's late. It's not like, okay, 1 minute. It really doesn't matter that it's 1 minute late. It hasn't changed anything, but it's been a well-stated legal dicta that late is late and there's no consideration. And we think that this is the same. Now, we understand that, you know, okay, we want the lowest bid, but the price really is insignificant here. I think it's the process that demands that the bid be considered non-responsive and struck and an award made to IP&E. I mean, this has happened to us, too. If you don't have a document, if it's not compliant, it's non-responsive, and therefore the bid should not be considered. I think there was some confusion on GPA's app. They used the terms proposal and bidder, solicitation. It's not a solicitation. It's a bid, and the bid requirements should be followed. There's no give and take. It was improper to reopen and ask the question, will you comply? And for that reason, we think that our protest should be sustained. An award be made to IP&E. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pereira. Mr. Botha, you have the floor for your opening.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer Mr. Brooks. GPA's position, obviously, is it's the lowest responsive bid. I think there's really no argument that, obviously, in this case, Mobil is the lowest bid. The real question is the issue of responsiveness, and obviously, from that perspective, we disagree with IP&E's position that somehow it doesn't matter whether they could comply with the requirements or not. I think it's clear from the documents that were submitted is that the requirements were quite simple as to the insurance. Nowhere in the special reminders was there anything that indicated that an insurance policy had to be procured and submitted at the time. And in fact, as even Mobil noted on their thing, you cannot submit an actual insurance policy because an insurance policy can't be awarded until after the contract is awarded and there's an insurable interest. So that couldn't have happened. And the documents that IP&E submitted were for previous contracts because we'll admit they were the incumbent and still are the incumbent carrier or provider for fuel fleet services at this time with GPA. So obviously they had a policy that we had accepted before. We're not arguing whether their policy was acceptable or not, but they had one from the previous one, and they couldn't have one for this particular contract, which is what the special requirements indicate, until the award is made and then the insurance contract has been approved by GPA. The requirements are simply that the winning bidder has to provide the appropriate insurance policies upon notification of the award of contract, which couldn't be, in fact, awarded till after a contract is awarded. Our position is that they are a responsive bidder and that we don't see the analogy, quite honestly, to the late bidder. In this case, there was no modification because no one of any of the three bidders could submit anything until after the award was made. The award hasn't been made yet because there was a protest. So we would request that the award be made to Mobile as the lowest responsive responsibility for each line item in items 1A and 1B as specified in the United Paper.
Thank you, Mr. Botha. Mr. Johnson, your opening statement on behalf of Mobile.
Good morning. Our argument largely is the same as GPA's. Mobile did have the lowest responsive bid. I'd like to point out that I believe the hearing will show today that the requirement for the insurance contract was part of the contract, the draft contract within the invitation for bid, not part of the invitation for bid itself. And as Mr. Botha already mentioned, none of the bidders could have submitted a valid insurance policy because none of them had any, a valid insurable interest under Guam law. Under Guam law, you have to have a valid insurable interest in order for you to have an insurance policy, or a valid insurance policy. And lastly, I think our third main point is that IP&E, even the policy that they did submit, did not include the contract number that they were required to include under the same section of the contract that they're seeking to enforce. Again, the contract even wasn't part of the invitation for bid, though. It was just the draft contract. It was provided as an example of a contract that would be signed between the parties, the winning bidder and GPA, whenever the contract was actually awarded. So those are the 3 points we think we will show today.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Now, before we go into the actual evidence of the case, are there any persons in the back who are going to serve as witnesses?
Not on behalf of the agency.
Okay. All the witnesses have been removed from the room?
We had not. Well, I mean, just, I believe the only witnesses, potential witnesses, are the agency representatives.
Okay, but that's okay. You're allowed to have one agency representative.
Right, so none of the other parties, to my knowledge, at least on behalf of GPA, will be witnesses, so.
Ms. Kerr, do you have any witnesses sitting in the back?
No, we don't have any other witnesses, but I was going to call Ms. Pangolin if she is, but if Mr. Rages knows.
No, she's out today, so Mr. Rages can certainly discuss.
Okay, then
any
I'm fine
on the procurement.
With Mr. Rages being in the room.
Well, okay, but once again, just like in a court case, the parties themselves, whether they're a corporation or an agency, the party representative can sit in the courtroom with the attorney. Okay, I'm just asking for any other witnesses beyond the party reps. Okay. Mr. Johnson, do you have any witnesses?
No, Mr. Engeltag would be the only witness.
All right. So there be no witnesses that need to be removed. Mr. Carrera, as you are the appellant, this is your case in chief. You may proceed with your first witness.
Okay, thank you. And then I'd like to call Ms. Pettigrew.
Swear or affirm that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes. Ms. Curry, your witness.
Good morning, Ms. Pettigrew. Could you please state your name for the record, please?
Tossie Pettigrew.
And where are you employed?
I work for IP&E Holdings, specifically with IP&E Guam.
And where were you employed before that?
I was employed with Louis Vuitton prior. Okay.
And how long have you been involved in with IP&E, working for IP&E?
5 years.
And what is your current position there?
Commercial accounts manager, focusing on aviation, government, and industrial business.
Is it fair to say that you have experience in submitting bids in response to government, IFBs and RFPs?
Yes.
Could you briefly explain your experience to the OPA?
As focal point for both local and federal government procurements, I participated in roughly 7 to 10 bids or RFPs with the respective agencies that would require fuel and fuel-related products.
When you say 7 to 10, do you refer to 7 to 10 total in the 5 years you've had this position, or
yes.
Is that yearly, or just 7 to 10?
7 to 10 as a whole.
Thank you. Okay.
It, Are you able to divide that up between federal and local procurement?
It would be approximately 5 local, 2 federal.
And did you participate in the request for bid 005-15, which is the subject of this protest?
Yes.
Could you briefly describe what the procurement was for?
The procurement was for GPH Transportation Fleet for their gasoline and diesel requirements.
Okay, and what was your role in the process?
It was picking up the bid package, reading and evaluating the information presented, determining whether questions needed to be asked to clarify positions, and as well as submitting the bid itself.
Is it fair to say that you prepared the IPD response to the proposal?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I made the mistake. Strike that. Request for the IFB.
I did prepare the documents related to the invitation of it.
Okay. I'd like to show you, it's been previously marked as Exhibit 1. I can give another copy, but well, there's a full set of what we're going to use, just to make it easier. But this will provide it for everybody. I'd like for you to identify Exhibit 1.
Just to make sure, to make it easier, is there an extra? I think we have a Xerox machine for that. And Chris, can you take that from him? So, and make some more copies back there. Sorry.
Sorry, I should have had another copy.
Yeah, that's okay. We have a copy.
And I'd like you to take a look at Exhibit 1, and if you could describe that for the record, please.
Exhibit 1 would be the instructions to prospective bidders and what would be required as far as submitting the bid package and what would be a response to bid package.
Okay. And is there anything in there relating to insurance?
In Exhibit 1, page 3, I believe, there would be Section 3.13, Item G, as far as certificate of insurance.
You said Exhibit 1?
Yes.
The third page?
It was part of, submitted.
No, third page of your exhibit.
Yeah, third page of the exhibit, I believe.
Okay, so these are the exhibits listed in your response to the agency report?
Yes, and then we submitted them with the list as a list of exhibits, which I got incorrect the first time, and OPA was kind enough to point out to me that I had a numbering wrong on it. I promise by next time we go through this, I'll have it right, so we won't.
Chris, thanks.
Okay. So, you refer to Exhibit 1, that would be the same Exhibit 1 as listed in your response to the agency report. Is that correct, Mr. Curry?
Yes.
Okay, now, for Exhibit 1, what page or what section the page were you referring to?
Yes. I guess I'm confused. I know these were attached as exhibit list, but did we have the pages in the procurement record where they were, or?
I just see the.
I have no doubt it's in there. It's just
the page is the document itself.
Yeah.
I don't have the, I think you number all the pages of your, of the procurement record itself?
We did. I think it goes up to like 900 something, whatever, but.
He's not following that pagination.
No, I guess not, because at least on ours, we tried to put in the procurement record where the exhibit were.
Okay, but these are his exhibits, so.
Oh, yes, so, okay.
Get on the same page. So what page on your exhibit one are you?
On page three, I believe, that we misspecified.
It says 9/22 at the top of it.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's a.
It's the one that's. It's similar. It's similar. It's different. This is not the same.
Okay. All right, so where it says G, certificate of insurance on the third page?
Correct.
All right, please proceed.
And.
But before we go, do all the other parties know where we're at?
I have it as exhibit on his, but I.
It's on page 872.
872.
872, okay.
What page?
872. Well, that paragraph is taken from that page.
Okay, well, for clarity, I'm just going off his response to the, Ike's response to the agency report, so exhibit one. That is about page, the third page where it says G, certificate of insurance. Are you there, Mr. Botha?
Yes, yes.
All right, please proceed, Mr. Botha.
Could you briefly describe again what your understanding was of the insurance requirement?
The insurance requirement would be to provide GPA with the copies of the insurances after award was made in that first paragraph. However, in the last paragraph, it says the contractor shall provide a copy of their insurance policy to GPA as part of the bid requirement.
And what was your understanding of, what did that mean?
That meant that any interested offeror or bidder must provide the insurance policies as part of the bid requirement.
And did you provide copies of the insurance policy as part of the bid?
We did provide policies.
Okay, and where did you get that policy?
From our insurance company.
Okay, was it a, did you make a particular request, or was it a policy already in existence?
It was a policy already in existence.
Was it in existence with respect to the fuel, for the fuel card contract that was in place? Or was it just a general policy that the company had?
It was a general policy that the company had with maximum limits.
Okay, so it didn't matter whether you were the incumbent or not in terms of providing that policy in response to the bid?
No.
Okay, and did you question the GPA about what was required?
Yes.
And could you describe, explain what you did there?
We did ask the question whether the policy itself was required, or whether GPA would just accept the insurance certificate as part of the bid requirement. GPA did respond in amendment. Let me find the amendment number. GPA did respond saying that they did, as part of the bid requirements, that they required a copy of the insurance policies themselves.
Now, could you, I see that you're looking at a document. Could you reflect for the record what page of, I believe it's exhibit one you're looking at?
Yes, it's exhibit one. The heading page would be 15/22 in the top right corner.
And what was GPA's response to the question about insurance?
GPA's response was no, they would not accept a certificate of insurance. At the time of bid, they required a copy of the insurance policies.
Okay. Now, you testified a few minutes ago that IP&E had an existing policy that it was able to submit. Do you know whether or not Mobile had a similar policy?
From my understanding, a policy was provided to GPA late December 2014 as part of the fast track requirement.
Okay, so.
For GPA 029-14.
Okay. Now, what happened, were you present at bid opening?
For the IFP, we're.
For this procurement?
05-15, yes.
Yes, okay, could you tell me who was there?
It was myself from IP&E, Jacob Terriama from IP&E, Anna Van Cedars from SPPC, Bob Kevin from SPPC, and Mr. Anatol.
Okay, and could you describe to the OPA the process that went on that day?
At bid opening?
Correct.
Of course, GPA procurement staff was present. It was noted who was present at the time of bid. The bid number was referenced, date and time was noted, and each prospective bidder's envelope was opened and reviewed for compliance.
Okay. And did you note anything in particular that was it morning?
It was the afternoon. It was 2 p.m.
Okay. Did you notice anything that particular?
When going through the documents submitted, I did make a note that IP&E did submit the insurance policy as GPA required in the amendment and answer to question 14, that GPA did require policy.
And what was there any reaction from GPA?
At the time, they went back and looked through the particular amendment and the question and noted that down as in the bid abstract that IP&E did provide copies of our insurance policies. And the other bidders who were there over SPPC pointed out that they did provide some sort of insurance documentation, and that was noted. And Mobile noted that they did not.
Okay. And what was the next step in the procurement process after that?
The next step, of course, was for the agency to review and go through the respective packets from the bidders. And the next response that we received was a request to confirm that we would be able to meet the insurance requirements as outlined.
Do you know whether or not GPA made any notations about whether or not the that insurance documents were submitted?
It was noted in the bid abstract at the time of opening.
I'd like to show you what's been marked as, I guess, a Pelley's Exhibit A. And ask if you could identify that. And if you're able to identify the document.
This is the bid abstract at the time of opening.
Okay, and do you note on here whether there is any notation about whether or not Mobile had provided the insurance policy that we're discussing?
If you read through the information provided in the bid abstract regarding the bidder, there is no mention of insurance.
And were there any further discussions at the bid opening concerning insurance?
No.
And the next time it was mentioned is when you received a letter from OPA?
A letter from GPA.
A GPA.
January 29th.
Okay, and what did that letter request?
It's on page 16 of 22 in Exhibit 1, where they requested that each bidder would confirm and comply with the insurance requirement, as outlined in section 3.13.
What went through your mind when you got that letter?
IP&E submitted insurance documentation. Another bidder submitted insurance documentation. So that was evidence that we would comply.
And could you explain to the OPA what's your understanding of the difference between responsibility and responsiveness? In terms of bid submissions?
Responsive would be providing the documentation outlined in the instructions to bidders as well as the contract document.
In your experience in dealing with bids, have you ever, after a bid closing, been able to modify a bid or submit additional documents?
No.
I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Pereira. Mr. Botha, your witness for cross-examination.
If I might, it's part of my exhibit list, but I don't know if we need to make additional copies, but...
I think I have your exhibit list.
I'd like to cross-examine the witness. Unfortunately, with my witness list, because the other one wasn't as inclusive as it could be. But it is the appellant's exhibit, so...
Okay, I have your exhibit list.
If I might approach, Mr. Hearing Officer.
The witness is your witness, Mr. Botha.
If I could show you what's been marked as Exhibit F on Appellant's exhibit list. This is page 872 on the procurement record, and if you would be able to identify that. And would you look at what's been marked as page 3 of your exhibit and see if you see any differences or similarities in the document that was submitted?
Mr. Botha, I'm not quite following your line of questioning. When you asked her to identify the exhibit F, she said, do you know what this is from?
Exhibit F?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. This is from GPA's contract.
Okay.
Oh.
And okay, please proceed.
Yes, and does that page include the portion that was, I guess, excerpted on your page 3? I see that one just included, I guess, what's been marked as G, certificate of insurance, but that is actually an excerpt from the actual proposed contract. Is that not correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So I guess your page 3 was just that excerpt that actually comes from the contract that was attached to the GPA bid proposal.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you mentioned on the abstract that, in your opinion, the procurement officials that were there when the bids were opened, did they mention everything that was included or not included? When the bids were open, to your knowledge, I mean, you were there with Mr. Anatok and the other folks from SPCZ as well. Was there anything the GPA left off or didn't include on that abstract that should have been there?
From my understanding, no.
Okay. So anything that could or should have, from either the perspective of either Mobil, SPCC, or yourself as the IP&E representative, were appropriately listed on that?
On the bid
after. On the bid after. Okay. And now that you've identified that actual requirement for insurance was listed in the contract as well, are you aware of anywhere within the actual bid documents itself and requirements, special requirements or otherwise, other than in the contract where the insurance requirement was put in? Or is it just listed, as you said, on page 872 and the excerpt that Mr. Pereira had questioned you about?
It is listed on this excerpt.
Okay. I don't have any further questions.
I'm sorry, did I hear your last response?
I said it was listed in the contract, in this piece particular.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Johnson, your witness.
Thank you.
Oops, may I retrieve my exhibit?
Yes.
Or we have.
Mr. Carr, you may also retrieve your exhibit.
I'm sorry?
You may also retrieve your exhibit.
Oh, sure.
And just for the record, could we assume they're all admitted into evidence?
Yeah, like I said before, they already are.
Okay.
And it's just so we can understand what the witnesses view.
Just so I don't have to keep walking up, I'm just gonna bring all my exhibits.
That would be fine.
Ms. Pettycord, I kind of want to get an idea of where these documents that we've been using as exhibits are located within the procurement record, the invitation for bid. Specifically, the last exhibit in that stack is exhibit small d. Each exhibit's marked with the...
The last one I have here is C.
Last one is C?
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry. It should be two pages after that. Could you open it up and turn to the first page of the D? Is there a number on the top right of that page?
813 of 920.
Can you identify what that page is?
It is amendment 6.
To... The invitation for bid?
For the invitation for bid, it is 005-15.
Could you speak a little bit louder?
Sorry.
Into the microphone, thank you.
Could you turn to page 834? Could you describe what's on that page?
This is the cover page for the invitation for bid, GP005-15.
Now, could you please turn to page 856? Could you describe what's on that page?
This is the fuel oil supply contract for IFB GP005-15.
On the next page?
It would be the first page, the preamble of the contract between GPA and the contractor or supplier.
Now, the first page of the contract, right at the very top, the first paragraph that starts with this contract, there's a blank there, isn't it?
There is.
And after the blank, whoever's included in that blank is hereafter supposed to be referred to as the contractor. This contract, correct?
Correct.
And that was blank when you received it?
It was.
And the understanding is that the person who was awarded the contract, who won the bid, would be the contractor, correct?
Correct.
I want to go back to page 872, which is further on in that same page. So it's the person who won would be responsible for doing all these things in this contract, correct? Now on page 872, I want to direct your attention to paragraph G, which we discussed previously. At the end of paragraph G, at the end of the first paragraph in section G, what does the last sentence say?
The certificates of insurance shall clearly show this contract number.
So the certificate of insurance that should have been provided, which the winning bidder should have provided with the contract, shall show the contract number, is that correct?
The certificate.
Did you provide certificates with your invitation for bid?
If you look at the next sentence, says the contractor shall provide a copy of their insurance policy to GP as part of the bid requirements, not the certificate.
Okay. And what's the difference between the certificate of insurance and the insurance policy?
The certificate of insurance has your maximum limits and includes that the company has an additional insured.
Okay. Did you provide a certificate of insurance that had this particular bid on it?
No.
Any further questions?
No further questions?
I have redirect based on their questions.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. There's been some discussion here about the certificate of insurance and the insurance policy. Could you explain the difference?
The certificate of insurance is a document that lists the maximum insurance required by the agency or customer with the additional insured listed on that certificate.
And so a certificate of insurance, is it fair to say, would come after the contract is awarded?
Yes.
Okay, and because it would name the additional insured?
Correct.
All right, and now, going back to a question that Mr. Bolta asked you in terms of the procurement process, when, I guess Mr. Johnson asked it as well, when you submit the contract, is the process that, is it possible for the government to just accept it without asking any further questions?
Yes.
Has that happened to you before?
Yes.
Okay, so the process is set up for when that you submit your bid package and it should be in shape for the government to accept it without any additional questions?
Yes.
And that's what we did, IP&E did.
Yes. As part of the forms on exhibit one that was provided. It requires all interested bidders to submit a copy of the fully executed contract along with the documents that have been outlined in the instructions to bidders as well as the subsequent amendments that resulted through the question and request for clarification period.
Now, Mr. Botha asked you a question about the bid abstract, and I guess it was your testimony that the lack of insurance policy for mobile wasn't noted on the bid?
It was not noted. However, the presence of policy information was noted for the two other bidders.
Okay.
On pages 2 and 3.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions.
I have a question, Ms. Pettycar, and it's actually a follow-up of that one. Earlier, at the start of your testimony, you mentioned that the representative from Mobil was Mr. Antioch?
Yes.
Okay. When the issue of insurance came up, I thought you said that Mr. Antioch acknowledged that there was no insurance. Is that correct, or did I misunderstand your testimony?
Let me rephrase.
Okay.
The question or the presence of policies was brought up by IP&E.
When you say IP&E, you in particular?
Yes, me in particular.
Yes.
So I did bring up the fact that we did have our policies as part of the bid package and part of the requirements outlined in Amendment 6, I believe. And at that point, SPDC's representative raised their hand and said, we have our insurances as well.
And who is that representative, to the best of your record?
To the best of my record, I believe it was Anna Van Cedars.
Okay.
And then, like I said, let me rephrase, when Mr. Anatok said it wasn't, he said, or from what I remember, it was that, oh, insurance policies are not required as part of the bid submission document.
Mr.
Yes.
And said something to that
yes,
effect.
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. So, and that was what I remember.
Okay. He said, to your recollection, when that issue was raised, so just to rephrase, IP&E acknowledged that they have an insurance
mm-hmm.
certificate or policy. Likewise, SPC representative acknowledged
And to the best of your recollection, Mr. Antioch acknowledged or stated that insurance...
Documentation was not a requirement.
Was not a requirement of the bid.
Yes.
Thank you. That's my only question.
I do have one question for you. So this insurance policy, did IP&E, the insurance policy that IP&E submitted with its bid, did you or IP&E have to purchase this policy specific for the bid, or was it an existing policy that it already had?
The policies that were provided were IP&E's existing policies for all of our businesses, for all of, whether it be environmental and pollution policies that were required. So it was it was our policies that included everything that we were covered under.
And let's say that IP&E would be awarded this contract from this IFP. Would you merely place GPA as an additional insured under a pre-existing policy?
Yes.
One of these policies that you submitted?
Yes.
Okay. So, Mr. Correct. I didn't have any other questions.
As a follow-up to your question, so if you were to do that, and would that require a change in your insurance policy?
It would require us to add GPA as an additional insured.
And would that require, to the best of your recollection, because mm-hmm. I know you're not an accountant, an increase in your insurance premium? To the best of your your knowledge.
To the best of my knowledge, because we would be the incumbent, because we're the existing provider, and we currently hold GPA as an existing insured, it would not necessarily cause an increase in our insurance policy. From my understanding.
So if you were a new provider, it might.
It might. It might. Depending on the relationship you have with your provider.
Based on these questions, is there any redirect?
I just have one.
Go ahead. We're going to go down the line.
I don't think it'll make any other problem. But in situations where we've where IP&E has named parties as an additional insured, are you aware of any instances where a premium has been increased because of that?
No.
Okay, if I might, the policies that were attached are ones that were business that you did with GPA, right? Am I correct?
The policies that actually broader than GPA.
Well, okay, let me be more direct. Is you have referenced in there bid numbers for GPA bids for which IP&E previously had the business. Is that not correct?
Yes.
Okay, so those were for GPA bids. And if you incurred new business, whether for federal or local, are you saying that your insurance carrier would not charge you an additional premium for additional locations?
I would not be aware.
Okay, that's not within your knowledge, whatever.
No.
Okay. And clearly, other than the fact that you already did this existing business with GPA, if it were a new line of business, presumably there would be an increase in premium for your carrier for new business, new locations.
Objection.
But you
testified she didn't know. I mean, it calls for speculation.
Mr. Botha?
Okay, so you're not aware.
What's your response to the objection? Or do you withdraw the question?
Oh, let me rephrase a different question then.
All right, go ahead.
Okay.
Right.
Never mind. I think we've gone through that as to her knowledge of what the insurance premiums are or aren't, and she doesn't have any particular knowledge.
Right.
I just have one follow-up on that. I'm sorry.
Hey, you'll get your turn at the end. Okay. Mr. Johnson, do you have any reprobs?
Sure, I have one question. You said that paragraph 2 under section G requires the contractor to provide a copy of the insurance policy to GPA at the time of the bid.
As part of bid requirement.
Okay. If that policy did not include the coverages that are required under this contract, at the time of the bid, you'd have to change that policy once you got the contract, wouldn't you?
And that's what it says up there for the next sentence, that any changes or amendments must be provided.
And where did you get it? Okay, so if you had no policy at the time, if a new bidder came in, who had never done any insurance in Guam, who had no insurance policies, they could not submit an insurance policy, would they not be able to bid on this contract?
From the way it reads, though?
No, from options.
Mr. Kerr, if I may.
Yes.
Okay, and the policy that was submitted, it's the same policy that was submitted in a fast track bid, which was the procurement you mentioned before.
Yeah.
And I believe you testified Mobil already had that a policy that met those requirements. Is that correct?
From my understanding.
No further questions.
Ms. Petticourt, I'm going to ask that you not discuss the issues raised or your testimony in these proceedings with any other parties for the duration of this hearing, which I hope will probably end today. Okay. I still have to give you that warning. Okay, so not even with your attorney. Okay.
No,
all right, so... I'm going to excuse you as a witness. Of course, you're subject to recall. Okay. Mr. Prairie, your next witness.
Thank you. I was going to call Mr. Regis. I don't know if GPA wants to call him as a direct first, and I could cross, or I could just call him as a...
He can call him if he likes, if he wants
that's
to discuss
your,
the...
Okay, it's your... Look, it's your choice as to who you're going to call.
Okay, I'll call Mr. Regis to the stand, please.
All right.
Jesse Regis.
Can you please raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Please have a seat, Mr. Regis. Mr. Prairie, your witness?
Yes, Mr. Regis, could you state your name for the record?
Jesse Regis.
And what is your, you work at GPA?
Yes, sir.
And what is your current position?
The buyer supervisor, work Haderman.
And how long have you been working at GPA?
At GPA, I've been working there for 22 years.
And how long have you been in your current position?
9.
Okay. And is it fair to say you've been pretty much involved in every procurement at GPA this year, concerning fuels?
Yes, sir, pretty much.
And, I mean, one nice benefit of having a representative here is you heard the testimony, so we'll cut to the chase. I'd just like to ask you a little bit about the insurance issue that's pending before the OPA. Did it come to your attention that, you know, the issue was raised that IP&E protested the lack of an insurance policy by Mobil?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And how did it come up in the agency other than, or did it come up in the agency aside from IP&E raising it?
Through the evaluation process, I guess that's why it was discovered, or it was mentioned or brought up again.
Okay, prior to that, did you have any questions about the insurance policy or the lack of it?
No, I didn't have any questions in that regard.
Okay, and you supervise Ms. Pangalinan?
No, Ms. Pangalinan is my boss.
Oh, she's your boss, okay. So the issue pretty much came to attention as a result of the evaluation committee?
Yes, because it was brought up, I guess, through when you're asking when I found out, or I wasn't, when I knew knowledge of the lack of policy.
Okay. And when did you become aware of that?
After the committee came out, but I guess through their eval.
Not before that?
No.
Okay.
So you're asking about myself, not me, so.
Okay. And what happened when the committee raised it?
Myself not being present in the evaluation, I cannot say. I don't know when or how they discovered that it was.
Okay.
At this time, what happened after that was we went to my boss, we brought it to her attention, and then we called in the other people that were present from our side. And it was brought up that Ms. Pettycourt did say that, in regards to what she testified earlier, that she mentioned that their policy was there and the others and the like, so.
Okay, and based on your understanding of the procurement law, a bid is generally allowed to submit additional information after bid closing?
For bids, no.
Okay, and in this instance, GPA requested all of the bidders to confirm insurance again? You were out of that?
No, sir.
Hmm?
No, sir.
Okay. Who would have that information?
To confirm if they had insurance?
Yeah, do you know whether, one second if I may. Show you it was submitted with our previous package of documents in Exhibit 2.
Can you see too?
It's been in that package of Exhibit 2, I'm sorry, the one in your right hand.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Could you identify that?
Yeah, this is just for clarification, this is during the evaluation process.
Okay.
Yeah. But we're not asking for them to submit anything. We're asking to that get awarded. Yeah.
So does that refresh your recollection about GPA asking for additional information?
We're not asking for additional information. To be submitted per se. We're asking for a confirmation that if awarded, we're going to be able to provide that.
Okay, but, well, is it fair to say then you didn't have a copy of Mobil's policy at the time, did
No, we didn't. That's been stated earlier.
Okay, one second, please. Okay, and Ms. Pangolino would be the one who was the overall lead on this? Ms. Procurement?
When you say that.
She was the manager,
yes. So ultimately, yes, you're the answer person, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I have no further questions.
Mr. Botha, your witness for cross-examination.
And just to clarify for the record, not necessarily as a question, but the request for clarification is listed in our, and the response is listed in our one as Exhibit C, procurement page 236. 234 is actually the following is the response that we're providing. So I don't have any further questions unless the hearing officer is Brooks or the parties.
Mr. Johnson, the witness for cross-examination.
I have no questions for cross-examination.
Mr. Carrera.
No further.
Nothing further.
Mr. Regis. Was a similar letter sent to the other parties, to IP&E as well as
SPC. I don't know that.
Ms. You don't know
just
that.
By looking, I don't recall. But I guess if it was to be required, it was requested amongst all three. That is a practice normally that we send it out.
Yeah. Mr. Botha, to your recollection, was a similar letter sent to?
It was, and Ms. Brooks, if I could draw your attention to Exhibits C and D. I apologize, it's in the procurement record, but just Exhibit C provides the letter that was addressed to IP&E, just the relevant parties that are part of the protest, and that is procurement page 234, and it reads, Dear Mr. Bamba, on behalf of IP&E, and shows the fax confirmation showing that, and then Mr. Anatok sent a response, which is exhibited as Exhibit D, to that, But in the procurement record, all three letters were sent out to all three bidders as required, and all three bidders provided clarification. But I'd only listed the relevant ones because SPCC did not protest, so I apologize. It is in there.
Okay.
And all three were sent, and but the only two relevant ones, I believe, were Mobil's response, Exhibit D, and SPCC, I'm sorry, and IPD's letter, which were listed in Exhibit C.
Thank you. That's all.
Mr. Regis, I just have a couple questions for you. So, was this IFP, GPA-005-15, was that ever awarded to any of the bidders?
No, sir.
And were you familiar with GPA amendment, I believe it was number 6?
I did see it, yes, sir.
And let me make sure I have the right amendment number here.
There were several for that.
So they're listed in different amendments, you know, different parts, different numbers.
Amendment number 6 is page 813 and 814. I'm not sure if that helps. It's a response to inquiries from SPCC and IP&E.
All right, just give me a second. In any of the amendments, to your knowledge, did GPA require the parties to submit insurance information?
Well, given the number of amendments that we should, to say is that it said it point blank just like that, I can't say that. But I know if IPD was stating that they found that it's required, then because I was looking for it for myself over there at the table there myself too, looking when Ms. Pettiford said it, so I was just to...
Just give me one second here, okay? Okay, so, I think it's Exhibit 1, the problem is Exhibit 1.
I think it was Amendment 2.
Yes.
So,
two. Oh,
that's his just show you what's been marked as the appellant's exhibit number two. And can you turn to the last page? Of course, that's amendment, GK amendment number two. Do you know what, if anything, did GPA mean in their response to IP and Zipper, that GPA requires a copy of an insurance policy? What do you mean by that?
The answers were provided by either the end using division or through our accounting, or we filtered out the questions that we received them. So in myself, per se, I was not the one that prepared it or even so, tried to understand insurance policies in that regard.
That's a fair answer. So you don't really, as you sit there, you don't have personal knowledge as to what that meant. By
that's correct.
Okay,
yes,
yeah, that's fine. Okay. And all right, I have no further questions for you. Okay. And Mr. Craig, did you have any redirect based on the questions by either the public auditor or myself?
No.
Mr. Botha?
No questions.
Mr. Johnson?
No.
All right. And I'm going to have to give you the same admonishment,
yes,
Mr. Ridges, please don't discuss your testimony with any of the parties, so this hearing will have concluded, very likely will be today, okay? And you may, your excuse subject to recall, of course, you may take your seat back there. Mr. Botha, are you the one that left that one document up?
No.
I think I did. I'll retrieve it.
I've tried to retrieve all mine.
Very much. Okay, well, before we go on break here, Mr. Craig, do you have any other witnesses?
I don't believe so.
Okay, so does the appellant rest?
I will rest, Your Honor.
Okay, so, Mr. Quantrill's
fine.
So, Mr. Botha, we're going to go on a short 10-minute break when we return, and we will start your case and you can be a call your first witness. Okay, so let's go off the record. It is 10:08. Thank you. Record, it was 10:20, and when we left off, we were about to start GPA's case in chief. Mr. Botha, you may call your first witness.
Well, Mr. Hearing Officer, I think this will be a very short presentation, as my sole witness is listed as my intention was Mr. Rages. I, to be quite honest, given the questions from both myself, Mr. Kerr, Mr. Johnson, I don't see any additional questions. I would just note that obviously the questions were asked and answered as part of the appellant's case in chief, but they would be the similar questions that we would have asked as to the record and all the rest of it, and he's explained what we have. So it is a little unusual, but...
Okay, so you're going to rest?
In so many words, government will rest based on his previous testimony as part of appellant's case in chief.
Okay, and all your exhibits that you submitted, they're already entered into the record, and they will...
That's correct, and actually, I believe all of them, the parties have questioned and hashed over, and in fact, they've been provided as, or been used as exhibits for the other witnesses, so I don't see how it could add to, unless hearing officer, anyone else has any further questions. Mr. Rages,
any questions for you? Mr. Johnson, that is your case in chief.
We don't intend to call Mr. Anton.
So the interested party mobile rest?
Yes, we rest.
Okay. All right. So
I'm sorry. I do have. Mr. Botha, regarding insurance, and this is just more from a general perspective. GPA requires the fuel provider, whether it be for this is fuel for your cars.
Yes, this is fleet fuel, both diesel and gasoline for all of the agency vehicles.
Okay, which is separate from the fuel that goes to the power plants.
Yes, the one we had done some time ago. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
And. What is the purpose of the bidder providing insurance from your perspective?
Well, the
bidder, the clarification was just to ensure that all of the parties could provide insurance policy, but we would not review the actual policy until award. Because obviously, I mean, there wouldn't be a policy until we're listed as an insured and for whatever locations and for any of our fuel requirements, the policy would say, if you recall from the previous one, there were different locations that we have, and each location for liability purposes and you know, if the fuel spilled or something would be listed on that policy for that location.
The question I'm leading up to, if this is for your fleet,
right.
The GPA trucks would be going to whoever is the provider. Let's say right now it is IP&E, which is Shell. Therefore, your trucks would go to any of the respective locations where Shell has its gas stations. Is that correct? Or does GPA have, like the way DPW has a fuel gas or pump on location? That's my question.
For these particular vehicles, the agency has, I'm not sure it's all of the IP&E stations, but they have a what they call a fleet fuel chart, and then they have a, well, now to keep track of things, each vehicle is has a ring inside it so that it ensures that it actually gets in the vehicle. So the vehicle travels to the stations that are authorized for that purpose. We do have other contracts. I believe Morco has one where they deliver fuel to us for certain locations.
Yeah. My point, what I'm trying to figure out is why the need for insurance, because like for instance for me, as a typical driver, I drive and gas, right? So I'm not requiring, because I go and I gas there. I mean, it's just like GPA is going and gassing at whoever is the vendor, right? So GPA does not have on-site at any of its facilities a diesel or gas pump. Is that correct?
No, we do at our facilities, but that's under a different contract. This is just for the fleet fuel for the vehicles to drive somewhere. The ones at the facilities, the pumps or whatever, are generally for the generators. So that's why, so for example, I believe Morco has that contract, so where they have the kind of like the mini tanker trucks, much smaller than what...
But that's not where your bucket trucks, your automobiles, they don't gas there.
No.
That's my question.
No,
I know
do.
That before, well, let me rephrase. Long time ago, DPW used to have on its site, I don't know if it still does now, an actual gas station. I mean, when I say gas station, a pump, you know.
No, we don't have that. It's only for, they would have the above ground storage tanks for like the generators at either the water wells or other locations where, so the kind of a mini tanker truck from Morco comes by and as needed fills those up with diesel.
So my question is, why would you require insurance?
Oh, okay. Well, we have...
I'm just...
I guess...
Because you're going to the facility of the provider.
Right.
And that provider obviously is going to have insurance for all of its customers.
Right.
So
but,
why GPA is imposing this requirement on the provider when it's not even at your physical location? The gas is at the location of whoever is the provider.
Right, and my understanding for the reason that's done is we have an insurance advisor, consultant, if you will, Grennan Associates, and they review the policies before we would approve a contractor or a vendor to do that, and it's their recommendation that there be certain minimum coverages for liability and others for any of the vendors we do business with, because the rest of our, I guess you call it an umbrella policy, is handled through their consortium, I guess the Lloyd's of London consortium, whatever, and so they have certain requirements on us, and so that's, I agree with you that
In theory, it might not require that, but I guess even for our vendors that do work with us, we require them to provide liability for their automobiles. So I guess, in other words, if an accident happens on our premises or otherwise, that there is some coverage other than our own.
But if the accident were to happen, it's going to be on the premise of whoever's, where your guy went to get the gas.
It would be on the premises of IP&E, and so we would want to ensure that should there be a spill, damage to the agency vehicle, that obviously there's some coverage adequate considered by our insurance consultant that would, you know, that would reimburse GPA, I guess, for damages.
Thank you for that clarification. And just one more, I apologize. Used to, before, I remember when we did an audit some time ago, when DPW went out for fuel for all of the government of Guam, GPA at one time did participate. When did GPA start going out on its own, to the best of your recollection?
Around the early 2000s.
In the early 2000s. So you were part of the master contract with DPW.
Prior to that, we did have a pump station at our transportation division where our vehicles did get fuel.
Oh, you did at one time. You don't have that anymore.
No more.
Okay.
And my understanding, one of the reasons for that is the environmental concerns.
Yeah.
All of our, my understanding now, except perhaps the Cabra's plans, all of our other, well, actually even those, all of our fuel tanks are above ground so that they can be inspected, because the underground ones have certain problems and issues, environmental leaking and otherwise. And so I believe that was why that was discontinued. A, the risk of fire and environmental issues and all the rest of that. So I guess it was determined at that time that it would be better for GPA to go out. That's obviously prior to my time, but that's our understanding.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. Yes, no more questions.
Any of the other parties have any questions? Mason online questions by the public comment? No. Okay, and I forgot to mention, as the interested party has rested, likewise, as all the other parties, the interested party mobiles exhibits, they're all entered for record and will be considered coming to the final decision in this matter. We're about to go into closing arguments. Are there any preliminary issues before we do that?
None for IP.
Okay. So we're going to closing arguments. It's your opportunity to argue what your respective party feels the evidence shows in this case. And Mr. Carrera, you will start with yours. You'll be followed by Mr. Botha. Mr. Johnson, you will follow Mr. Botha. And, of course, Mr. Carrera, because you have the burden of proof here, you will have the opportunity to rebut at the very end and have the last word in this appeal. Okay? And you may, the floor is yours.
Thank you. As I indicated in our closing argument, that, you know, we believe that GPA had imposed a requirement for people to provide insurance. The insurance was available. We had it under an existing contract to provide for fuel services. It was covered under our general rule policy that we used on the fast track procurement, as did Mobil have, because they're part of the fast track procurement too, which is the last protest that we did here. These policies were available. We complied with the requirements. I think the documents prove without any doubt that the policy was required. Whether or not it should be required in response to the public auditor's comment is irrelevant, because it was required as part of the bid process. All documents are to be required. GPA was well within its rights to just take that document and sign it. It was going to be a binding contract. There's been some discussion here about adding an additional insured would change the price of the insurance. I submit to the OPA that's a red herring. The prices were fixed in the contract. It's in the bid abstract. So if the price would change, which in my opinion it would not, it would be the burden on whoever was the awardee. IP&E took the pains to prepare their proposal in accordance with the requirements. It submitted the proposal. Allowing people to Mobil in this particular instance to supplement their proposal by adding the insurance policy was wrong. It although it's a lower price, that shouldn't dictate moving away from the procurement process, which we believe we followed here. I think even though it may result in an additional cost to GPA, I think that, you know, adherence with the procurement regulations is tantamount. And for that reason, I think the protest should be granted and award made to IP&E Holdings. Thank you very much.
Botha, you're opposed?
Yes, I do agree with some of what IP&E has said. They said the policy is required. I think there's a distinction. We agree that a policy is required. But unfortunately, our position is that the policy is required upon award. I think as Ms. Brooks has asked, there has been no award made. So our position is clearly that once an award is made, then we would demand that that contractor, vendor, provide us a policy. Policy would be reviewed by our insurance consultant. As long as it's adequate, the award would go through, and that vendor would have the ability to provide fleet fuel, diesel and gas to GPA. I think the evidence that was submitted is pretty clear in this case. Upon clarification, it's clear that even the IP&E witness admitted that reference that was made to the insurance is in the contract, the proposed contract, which obviously is only upon award. The contract's not signed. It's just to indicate to the vendors that applied that this is what we propose as a contract, so that they have an idea that there is not a long period of negotiation or whatever in the contract, and they understand that that is the contract that's contained for that. The abstract, clearly there was testimony that the abstract is there. There's no allegation that it either was or wasn't reported. I mean, that's the document speaks for itself. It shows what was included and not included. Our position is that the mobile bid was responsive and responsible, and that should be properly awarded to mobile for those line items 1A and 1B. We believe that the requirements were showed what was required, and that the contract, which they speak of, is only post-award. So we do agree there's a policy required. It's just post-award. Mr. Kerr's position appears to be that policy is required pre-award. So our position is that certainly the insurance policy, which A, lists the contract number, and the fact is that DP's as an insured party, and for the insurance requirements can't be issued until after, in fact, the contract is awarded. And so, clear from the abstract as well, that the lowest bidder was mobile. Our position is that mobile was the lowest responsive and responsible bidder, and that we properly made an award to mobile. And we request that IP&E's appeal be dismissed, and that the award be confirmed to mobile as was GPA's intent.
Thank you, Mr. Botha. Mr. Johnson, any closing statement?
Thank you. As my first point, I kind of want to follow with the argument by Mr. Botha that the contract insurance policy was required, but it's required by the policy after the award. And this is clear by the fact that it's not actually part of the IFB. IPA had to go out of its way in order to take the subsection G out of its context of the contract in order to make it the third page of the exhibit, in order to make it look like it's part of. Nobody's obligated under the contract until the contract is awarded. This is clear by the first page of the contract, where there's a blank space indicating who the second party to the contract is. It's not all the bidders that are required to fulfill the obligations under the contract, including Section G. It was the winning bidder who's obligated to do this. Moving on, as we stated in our hearing brief, but you can't really bring witnesses for this. None of the bidders could have submitted a valid insurance policy. It's not possible to have a valid insurance policy on the law unless you have an insurable interest. This is indicated in 18 GCA, Section 18, 182048, without an insurable interest under the next subsection, which is 22 GCA 18204C, without an insurable interest, the insurance policy is void. So if you follow the argument that IP&E is making, it's possible for a company to win this award by submitting a void insurance policy. If you follow with the argument, is you're basically encouraging the submission of policies that have absolutely nothing to do with the bid that they're being submitted for as a requirement for a company to win the award under that bid. Even the policy that IP&E submitted, I understand they're making a distinction to the fact that there's a difference between an insurance certificate and insurance policy. But the policy they submitted that has absolutely nothing to do with this, the contract up for bid. One of the exhibits that we submitted, which is part of the record, indicates that the contracts that are considered under the policy doesn't include this particular contract. So, sure, we can go ahead and draw that distinction, but to what end did that result? They might as well have provided any insurance policy along with this in order to comply with the bid, whether it be a health insurance policy or an automobile insurance policy or any kind of insurance policy. Either one of those would have been equally irrelevant to this bid as the policy that was submitted by IP&E, because it doesn't contain any reference to the contract up for bid. Lastly, I asked Ms. Pentecore one question about whether a company that is new to Guam, who has never had an insurance policy dealing with this sort of matter, would be able to bid under this contract and win an award under this contract. And she indicated no. And I think that indicates a particular concern for the OPA, in that it would create a barrier to entry for any new company that's coming in that hopes to bid on this particular contract. Because essentially only people that have insurance policies, and possibly only insurance policies that include GPA as an insured party under those policies, would be able to bid on this award and hope and have any chance of hoping to win this award. So at those points stated, we just request that the OPA dismiss this appeal and allow GPA to award this contract to Mobil.
Okay, the OPA will. My apologies.
I know you don't want to hear me anymore. I don't blame you.
That is not true, Mr. Carrera.
We don't mind if he gets another opportunity.
I was looking down, diligently taking notes.
I said you were looking down on me.
I didn't see you biting at your chomp there. Waiting up to go and give your rebuttal. You may do so at this time.
Well, I do disagree with a lot of what co-counsel said. I do believe there's an insurable interest here, because when you submit a bid, you submit your requirements that you have to perform. If you don't perform, the government's entitled to breach damages. So there is a very insurable interest here. As far as a barrier entry, I believe that's a red herring. If any company thought it was a barrier to entry, they certainly could have protested the requirements, as we did with GPA requesting 5 years audited financials, which we didn't have because we weren't in business for 5 years. We protested that as restrictive. It's in the record, and GPA acknowledged that. As far as when GPA chose to review the insurance policy, well, if they wanted to choose at a time of award, they shouldn't have made it a responsiveness factor, which they did by requiring it at time of bid. For that reason, the procurement is tainted in the sense that it should have been, it was requested, whether or not they wanted it or not, they asked for it. And if that wasn't their intent, then they should have left it like every other normal procurement would be, made it a responsibility factor. But they didn't. And therefore, I think the protest should stand.
Thank you, Mr. Pereira. Now, we will take the matter under advisement and essentially issue a decision within 30 days. Prior to doing that, we're going to the parties, pursuant to the scheduling order, or first amended scheduling order issued in this matter on June 29th and 15th. Basically, the parties can, they're not required to submit a brief concerning remedies, or basically that's your opportunity to say how you think the OPA should resolve the appeal. And that's due on August the 20th at 5 p.m. Thereafter, we will start to analyze this matter, consider all the evidence and arguments submitted, as well as the filings of the party and the procurement record, and issue a decision within, in writing within 30 days. Okay. Are there any other matters we need to take up at this time?
None from the government.
None from IT.
None from
And the, this public hearing is hereby concluded. We are off the record at 10:49 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you very much.